Hello everyone, welcome to the Villa Together podcast, which is a match preview of the Wolverhampton Wanderers versus Aston Villa match. Once again, I am joined by Joe Davidson. Joe, how are we?
Very good, thank you. Pleasure to be back.
And we are joined by Alex Richards. How are you doing, Alex?
Yeah, not bad, mate. How are things with yourself?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. You know how it is. Being a football fan, it's all good.
I won't get that far.
You never know. So, well, obviously, we're going to talk about the game, which takes place Saturday at the Molineux. I'm going to come to you, Alex. Wolves' form this season, how would you describe it?
Hit and miss. I think that's the very best way to just put it. I mean, it's been so up and down, you know. Results like losing 4-0 at West Ham, but then you're completely dominant over a side like Crystal Palace and beat them at home. You go to Leeds and Leeds have a lot of the ball and you come away with a 1-0 win. Great result. You go to Arsenal and you win. But then some others are just, you know, not quite doing it, not quite scoring, not being clinical. It's been very up and down. It's been a real mixed bag so far.
What would you kind of put that down to? Because obviously there's, you know, the likes of Doherty, Jota, both left, who've obviously been at the club for a while and kind of were, I suppose, big parts of Nuno's team and what he's kind of implemented over the last few seasons. And obviously new players come in. Do you think that's a big part to it, or is it just kind of, is Nuno trying to change things slightly?
I think it's a real mix, but I think the two names you named there, Jota and Doherty, that's a big change that was made, because last season, you know, Jimenez is a top scorer, but then Jota's number two, Doherty's third top scorer. It's a big portion of goals that we've lost, and you've got to find somewhere to replace them. Have they replaced them in that respect? I wouldn't say so. I think, you know, they've replaced Doherty with a better player in Semedo, and they've tried to adapt the attack more to replace Jota. You know, Neto's come in and he's doing terrific. Pedence is getting a bit more of a central role. We're seeing Traore now get back into the team. But there's a lot of change going on there. You know, the last couple of seasons, it's been so much about we're going to be a counter-attacking team, we're going to be so solid, and then we're going to really grow into games. Now they want to move up a step, and so it's got to be more about domination and more about impacting other teams by forcing ourselves on them. And it's a balancing act. It's a balancing act that they're treading, and I think that's kind of having an impact on the results and on the performances that we are seeing. Some weeks, okay, you can see where they're going, but then other weeks, oh no, this is really a bit of a step back. And then you throw into that you know, everyone's had a lack of pre-season, but obviously Wolves finished last season so much later with the Europa League and whatnot. It's very different. It's very, very much something that they're just, it's a lot of an adaptation, you know. If they really wanted to set in this new kind of philosophy of being more front foot and being more on the ball, then they needed more time to work on it, really. So they're kind of learning that on the fly. So I think when you combine it all, that's kind of the answer that why it's been so up and down.
Yeah, I think obviously off the back of two pretty good seasons in the Premier League after an excellent first season, the Nuno in the Championship, I think people expected Wolves to, and they probably still do, expect Wolves to certainly be top 10, probably top 8 as well. So it certainly has been one of them, you know, way you've described it in terms of their form being hit and miss. It has been up and down, but I still think people would expect them to finish kind of top 10. Would you still think that's going to be the way that it's going to go, or is it still, you know, really dependent on whether people can settle in and you can kind of change the way that Nuno is trying to change things?
I still think there'll be that a top 10 finish is very much, you know, in their capabilities and something that they can achieve. You know, they've lost Raul Jimenez now for however long, and that's obviously a huge blow. But that is kind of the wheelhouse that they're dealing with. You know, as you say, back-to-back seventh place finishes. There has to be some sort of period where they don't quite achieve that. Because other teams improve. You know, last season they finished seventh. Arsenal were below them. You would have expected Arsenal to kick on again. They haven't. But other teams have got better. You know, you see Everton had such a great start, but now they're stumbling. It's such a mixed bag, and the league's so tight, and it's really such a different season in terms of there's so many factors around everything now because of how the world is at the moment with COVID and with everything having to kind of be squeezed in place. So there's so much adaptation week in, week out. You know, you saw your game against Newcastle get cancelled. So that's another game that gets added to your schedule later in the season that you have to adapt to then. And I think it's very difficult to really pinpoint other than your top six. And that's kind of a moot point now because Arsenal are so far below them all. It's really difficult to pinpoint exactly where everybody's going to finish this season at the moment. Perhaps apart from the bottom three or four who already look cut adrift.
Yeah, I think one thing you mentioned, obviously, there's a lot going on. I think it's an odd kind of world for people going through, let alone having to play football and deal with it with the regular testing and everything, the protocols they've got to go through. One thing that people have mentioned quite a lot is, obviously, fans aren't allowed in the grounds. So, you know, home advantage, has that kind of gone? And I'm going to come to you, Joe. Obviously, using Villa as a perfect example. What about our kind of form this season in terms of our home form against our away form? It's kind of very black and white almost, isn't it?
It is. But at the same time, I actually had a bit of a look at the XG for home and away games, and it's not hugely dissimilar, actually. It would be more suggestive that actually we've just been really unlucky at home. And to be honest, with a lot of our losses, that's a pretty consistent theme. I mean, we highlighted in the last podcast that 8 of the last 9 shots on target have gone in. That you can't buy that sort of luck. And unfortunately, it's just going against us at the moment. Realistically, out of our 4 losses this season, significantly outperformed the opposition in terms of XG. In every single one of those games that we have lost, we've bottle loads of chances. They've had a couple of pop shots and they've gone in, essentially. I don't think there's too much to look into now. And I think we've got to remember, we're 9 games into the season. I think trying to look for sort of massive overarching themes regarding form at this stage is a little bit premature, I think.
Yeah, I think it's something that a lot of people kind of draw to, saying, well, you know, away from home, we're much better than at home. And, you know, we've said it a number of times. There's a lot of games where we've played at home and, you know, we've played relatively well. And you kind of look at it and you think, how have we come away from that game without winning anything? Obviously, you know, you talk about XG and we've mentioned it before and how our XG in, I think, every game this season, bar possibly the Leeds game, we have significantly outperformed the teams. What about the difference from last season to this season and how we've been? What changes have there been in the Aston Villa team going forward?
I mean, we're a significantly better team now. There's no two ways about that. Bringing in Watkins, we now have a focal point in attack who holds the ball up. It's allowing us to play significantly higher up the pitch because it isn't just ping-ponging back to us as it was previously. Last season, we had the issue of, particularly when Wesley went out, but it was there before that as well, that the ball would go forward to either Keenan Davis or Al-Ghazi and it would come back twice as quickly as it went forwards. We spent the whole game just camped on the edge of our box, hoping Grealish would pull something out of the bag. This season, we have him there to be able to pull us up the pitch. The amount of balls he manages to bring down and turn on is pretty phenomenal in comparison. That's been a massive change. Having Barkley in the centre as well, with his additional link-up play with Grealish and breaking beyond Watkins as well, that's adding another dimension. And something that hasn't really been noted that much but is quite important is we've moved away from being a team that progresses the ball through passing. We're now the team that carries the ball most in the league. We try and dribble past opposition and dribble into spaces as opposed to passing into it, which is a fairly unique step, but it's also the reason that in that Leeds game, for example, it backfired so badly. Because if you get caught in possession, as opposed to it being the ball getting caught, it's the ball and the man, leaving you one further out. So all of these things are changes from last season. And I think the combination as a whole have made us a far better team. And realistically, we're good for the position we're in at the moment. And we should actually be higher up than we are even now, even though we're 2 games behind most teams. If you look at expected points, if you look at expected goals against, you would actually put us around between 4th and 6th.
Yeah, I think obviously, being Villa fans, we can kind of see that improvement. And obviously, one of the big components of that improvement has been, as you mentioned, Ross Barkley. It's kind of, and Alex mentioned it in our 490 podcast after the Liverpool game. It's kind of extra support for Jack Grealish, isn't it? And extra support in terms of top quality. Ross Barkley is a player that we had missing last game. He's missing for this game as well. And Alex mentioned him earlier. Raul Jimenez is a man that you've got missing for a while. How are Wolves going to line up without him? Because obviously last week you played, I think it was a 4-3-3. And I think that is only the second time that Nuno has started with four at the back since he's been in charge. So since 2017. Does that make a massive difference playing four at the back for Wolves and how they set up and how they play under Nuno?
I think it does, but I think this goes back to what we've mentioned about them wanting to be more dominant and wanting to be less of a counter-attacking team, more one that really takes a game to an opponent. It's about freeing up an extra man further forwards and giving them a greater chance of dominating matches. I think the issue we saw in the first game that they attempted this against Southampton was Connor Cody was missing. And really, they were all at sea. They were sixes and sevens for large periods. You could tell that the leadership wasn't there. Now, we expected them against Arsenal to revert to a back three, and they didn't. And it worked tremendously. Cody was back. They were organised. Everybody knew their jobs. Come away with the result, and they were deserving winners. Against Liverpool last week, you know, I think there's a lot of fallout of that result that's come and has been perhaps a little over the top because of the scoreline in the end. But for 55 minutes, they were more than matching Liverpool at Anfield, and it was only a mistake from Cody that meant that they were behind. After that, you know, another mistake leads to 2-0, and then they made changes to try and get back into the game and fell apart. I think starting lineup wise, I think it won't be too dissimilar from what we saw at Anfield. There's a lot of looking at getting the young kid Fabio Silva in up front, giving him a first start in the Premier League. I don't think he's quite ready for it yet. He did well in a cameo at Arsenal, came on when Jimenez got injured, then after 60 minutes was substituted as they held on. At Anfield last week, he came on, didn't have much of an impact, didn't get much of a look in. So I do think that as it stands, they will continue to try this way of having Traore down the right, Neto coming in from the left, and Daniel Pedence perhaps as the most central attacking player. He won't necessarily play up against centre halves, likes to drop deep, and you know, he's only 5'5". He hasn't really got the stature to be battling against them. So it's about him being clever and him dropping off into those little spaces where he can then link with Neto and Traore, or even Leander Dendonca playing in central midfield, making those forward runs.
Do you think that, you know, in terms of long term, because I think Jimenez is going to be out for a number of months. There's obviously going to be, you know, he's going to have to come back when he is, you know, 100% fit because of the severity of his injury. Is Fabio Silva going to be the long term? I say long term, I want about, you know, long term while Jimenez is out injured. Is he going to be the long term replacement for Jimenez, I suppose, long-term, in case Jimenez does go, is he the most likely lot replacement, or could Pedence kind of develop more into that central role?
No, Silva is definitely the most likely replacement. The issue, of course, is he's only 18 and he's got such little experience, not just at Premier League level, but at any senior level. So the issue is, do you throw in a player that you saw as such a long-term prospect? You know, that he was signed for big money because of what he can potentially become. And that wasn't with a view to this season. That was with a view to, okay, he'll get some minutes here and there. And then it's more of a 2, 3, 4 years down the line focus. Whether he's ready now, for me, he hasn't quite looked it. But how do you know without games? You know, he needs to be given that regular option. Pedence, if they're trying to have an attacking focal point, he isn't going to be that. He's a number 10, he's a creative player, he comes from wide, drops deep, he likes to link up with a bigger target man, which was why he actually did impress when he was playing with Jimenez. So I think they may well need to to enter the market in January, whether it's to bring in a striker on loan, whether it's to actually buy one, to give them that little bit extra, that little bit more of a focal point. You know, I look at it and I think someone, Olivier Giroud at Chelsea, that type of player, a veteran striker that knows his job, knows how to score goals, would be ideal, a platform players can play off. Obviously, Giroud, Chelsea don't want to let him go. So you're looking for someone of that type, not necessarily him. Whether Silva, you know, he could, we're coming into a busy Christmas period, he should get minutes, he should get some opportunities in the coming four or five games. It's all about whether he can take them. If he comes in and he scores a couple and looks really good, then perhaps that changes that transfer plan in January. But I think for now, I think it's something that moving forwards, as you say, Jimenez is going to be out a while. They do look as though they are short there and they need to sign someone in January.
What about kind of approaching the game on Saturday against Villa? Aside from, you know, Jack Grealish is going to be the man that people are going to talk about. He's going to be the man that, you know, Wolves are probably going to be thinking about going forward. As someone who watches a lot of football and will have seen a lot of Aston Villa, is there more to Aston Villa than Jack Grealish at the moment without Ross Barkley?
Yeah, of course. I think, as Joe pointed out, Villa are now a very good, complete side. Yeah, there's a little bit of inconsistency there. Yes, there's some players that, okay, you might want to upgrade on. But it's a decent team. You look at someone like Douglas Luiz in central midfield. When he came from Man City and joined Villa initially, it was, okay, he's a player of good potential. He's now a very good footballer. He knows how to play that holding midfield position. He uses the ball really well. He's grown with the extra pressure that's been on him playing at first team level in the Premier League. And he's now a very good player that bigger clubs will be looking at. Ollie Watkins signed for big money. It's always a risk when you take a striker from the Championship. But he has really flourished because of his movement, because he is quick, because he can hold the ball up, and he knows how to attack a six-yard box and get goals, which was something that you were missing last season. So I think those two are just two examples of players that you have signed in recent months and in the last 18 months who have since grown. And I think Wolves, if they're too focused, you have to focus on Jack Grealish because he is the outstanding player in that side. But you can't forget about somebody like Luiz with his passing range. You can't forget about someone like Watkins who can find space in the box, who has great ability. I can't stop laughing at them.
That's what I was waiting for her input. So we've obviously we mentioned the kind of Villa and the improvements with Barkley and we've mentioned Jimenez and how that's changed with him coming out and the potential how they're going to line up against Villa. Joe, what about the options that Villa have to replace Ross Barkley? Last game out, we went for Hourihan for Barkley. What are the other options that we've got and kind of what is the most like-for-like replacement for Barkley?
So really it depends on how we're going to try and use Barkley in that game. Predominantly we've used him as a 10 in that sort of 4-2-3-1 role, but he's also very capable of playing as an 8 as well. So there is that sort of fluidity to it. If we're planning on playing him as more of an 8, then the most natural replacement probably is Hourihan. Because he has that passing range, but he lacks that dynamic edge that Barkley brings. If we're playing him a bit further forward, we have the options of Aaron Ramsey, who's, I think he's 18, played very, very well in a few friendlies and cup games coming through. And the other option is Traore. He's played a few games. He's predominantly a winger, really, but he can play in the centre as well. I think the most likely one is Hourihan to play, to be honest. I'm not convinced he's the best option of the three. I think there's a very strong case that Traore is actually going to start on the right wing as well, particularly after Trezeguet missed that open goal again 2 weeks in a row. Dean Smith has got a little bit of a habit of being reactionary when things like this happen. For example, when El Ghazi missed that one at the end of last season and got dropped for the rest of it. I've got a feeling Traore will start because of that. And because of that, I think it'll be Horan in for Barkley.
What about Marvelous Nakamba? Is there a chance that he could come in and maybe we'd push John McGinn further forward?
I mean, potentially. I think Nakamba is actually a slightly underrated player. If you look at his defensive contributions, they've always been very, very solid. Puts up similar sort of numbers to what Idrissa Gueye did when he was at Everton. So actually a very solid defensive midfielder, lacks any form of passing range. I think realistically against Wolves, considering Wolves have been averaging around 45% possession this season and haven't, in with all respect, been quite the goal threat that they have in previous seasons, I think we'll go for a more attacking lineup than that. So I imagine that McGinn will remain in that eight role and we'll play Horan next to him with Luiz behind.
What about the kind of, you look at Ross Barkley, and I think the Arsenal game is the one that stands out for me. When out of possession and there was, you know, the balls, so Arsenal are playing the ball out from Leno out to defence, and then the press is initiated with Watkins, with Grealish and with Barkley. If Traore is to come in for Trezeguet, and obviously Barkley's not there, you know, who are the guys that are going to kind of take that up in terms of joining Watkins, joining Grealish to kind of make that pressure? Because when you look at how Rehan, like you say, is not dynamic enough going forward, and I think sometimes it's not a case, he's a fit bloke. I just think it's the case of that kind of, that acceleration. So in the press, I always find Harahan's a bit below par. Who do you think, you know, if Traore is the man on the right, who do you think is going to be, you know, joining that press going forward for us, trying to win that ball back? I know Wolves probably won't have possession as much as other teams have, but obviously when they do, and we look at trying to win the ball back and force it out wide to get those high turnovers, you know, Traore hasn't seemed like that man in recent games.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Historically, Traore's defensive numbers for a winger have actually always been very good. Very high interception and tackle success rates and high contribution numbers. But it is worth noting that has been in the French league. It is a lot slower. So far, in my opinion, he's looked off the pace. He's looked hurried every time he's had the ball. And he just looks like a player who lacks the confidence in his own ability to really cause problems. I'm not convinced by him at all, really. I think if he is to play, it'll be in defence. We'll go back to that 4-4-2 system and it'll be him and Watkins leading from the front. McGinn probably pushing into that right mid position defensively with Burahan and Luiz in the centre. With that being said, I think that is a significantly weaker team defensively than we are when Barkley's there. And I'm not convinced it's as good going forwards either. I think given our lack of depth, losing Barkley is one of the biggest losses we could have had, unfortunately.
I think for both teams, we've got very similar kind of, I say issues. When you look at, obviously Barkley came in, he became an integral part of our 11. And also became an integral part of not just the 11, but also our good form. And we have, I think we've used the fewest players in the league this season. So obviously when it comes to replacing an injured player from the start of 11, it's an issue. Wolves as well, and probably not as much this season, but over the, you know, the kind of the tenure of Nuno, he's also stuck to a similar kind of core of players and had a system to go to. He's kind of eventually last season or season before, Raul Jimenez came in and he's kind of fallen on that striker to kind of complete the kind of set more so in terms of going forward. Wolves lose Jimenez and it's a case of not only have you got to rely on other players, but it's players that need the time. So, you know, you talk of Silva being the kind of, I suppose, the out and out most likely option, but he hasn't got the game time. For us, you know, maybe we talk about Traore. He hasn't got the game time. You know, do these kind of things highlight the issues when teams don't kind of use enough players throughout the season? I know it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I think, you know, Wolves, you know, Alex, Wolves over the last three seasons, they've had a main core of players that they've used. And I suppose you've been quite lucky that you haven't had any bad injuries. You know, does it hinder teams when they then need to make a replacement and they're so reliant on a core set of players?
Well, ultimately, that's your difference between your top teams who have the big, powerful squads where they can afford to have like-for-like replacements, and the difference between clubs in positions like ours at the moment, where you are trying to move up, basically. You have to spend your money on your key starters. Wolves have obviously spent a very decent amount of money to take him in as on loan initially and then to sign him permanently, 30-odd million. He signed a big contract as well. Now, you could have had two strikers for 15 million before that, if you just break it down in its most basic form. You could have signed two strikers for 15 million who you could rotate. So your squad may well be slightly stronger, but your actual starting 11 doesn't have the same threat. So they've had to spend money on really pushing forwards that first 11. And that might leave you light in some areas. The fact that we have only ever been playing with one striker, really, which has been Jimenez. You know, they tried to bring in Patrick Catrone as a foil for him, or as somebody that could rotate in and out. It lasted 6 months, and he was ill-equipped to do the job effectively, which is why Jimenez last season just played and played and played, and they never replaced Catrone. The point with Silva was, okay, he'll get minutes in the cup competitions, the League Cup, but they got knocked out. So, you know, it's difficult to bring him in the Premier League. Now they may well have to because of Jimenez's injury. So I don't think you can really point it as a negative thing that both have looked to really strengthen these core first 11s, because that's what they need to do. It's just whether, you know, as we've seen, whether injuries hit, whether this and that factors that you can't perhaps control kick in, and it means you have to make changes. Unfortunately, at the moment, you're seeing it with Ross Barkley. We're seeing it with Jimenez. Changes need to be made, and the overall team isn't going to be as strong because they are ultimately two of your better players.
Yeah, I completely agree with what Alex has said there as well. It's an unfortunate consequence of FFP and the revenue streams in football at the moment. If you're not playing Champions League football every year, you simply can't afford to have 30, 40 million pound players sat on the bench. And that's part of the problem. It's creating an even bigger divide because, yeah, a team like Leicester, a team like Wolves can push on and try and break into that top four. But if they pick up any injuries at all, they're so much weaker in terms of depth than your Arsenals, than your Chelsea's, your City, Liverpool, even Man U, to be fair. And just not having that consistent income and that depth of player base to fall back on is kind of what makes the gap, really.
Yeah, I think we've seen this season with Everton. You look at the players Everton have bought in, obviously James Rodriguez, great signing. You know, they bought in Alan Doucouré, other players. They've had a few injuries and they look a completely different team. They seem over-reliant on, you know, James being the creative player and Calvert-Lewin getting the goals. And he has chipped in with goals even when the results haven't been going their way. But a team that started so well with four really good wins in their first four games, a couple of injuries in defence, in the fullback positions as well, Luka Dinya getting injured. And, you know, they almost have completely fallen apart. Their form, it's a shadow of their early season form. And I think, going back to the point you made, FFP obviously is a big thing at the moment. And, it's tying the owner's hands when it comes to transfers. And, you know, that shows there. It shows with Everton, the injuries they make, and it's your players coming in. Iwobi's having to play in fullback. You know, we've got the issue, and obviously, you know, Wolves got the issue as well. And it is a tough one. And I think, you know, at this time, obviously, January seems to have come round really quick with the season starting late. The rumours have already started. I think I've seen Jesse Lingard, Dele Alli linked with moves to Villa. I think it's lazy journalism. But again, it comes down to, okay, if we are to sign these players, we've got a 25-man squad. You know, we can't just say, okay, we're not going to register you, but carry on picking up a wage. So you can't just pile this on. And obviously clubs with the money, the wages and everything all comes down to it. And it all goes against financial fair play. And obviously Alex mentioned it about it just really makes that difference between a top side and the kind of the lesser sides or the also runs. You know, Wolves got close. They have done for the last couple of seasons, but it really is hard when you look at Manchester United and the amount of money, not necessarily the quality, because they've spent a lot of money on poor players, but the amount of money they have on the bench in terms of how much they spent on those players. I think it really, really does show that gap. And it is a significant gap. And I think financial fair play has shown that over the years, the gap that it's made between us guys. Obviously, you know, Wolves owners have pumped money in. That, you know, that a lot of the players you go through, the majority of the team, you know, big money signing, especially in the attacking positions. You know, Pedence was a big money signing last season. You know, Fabio Silva as well, big money signing. Villa again, you know, last season we shelled out a hell of a lot of money. We have done this season. You think of the money that you've spent, and okay, you could probably, with Wolves, you could probably look at it as a net spend because, you know, they've sold the likes of Doherty and Hotter and stuff like that. But in terms of Villa, we're not really selling the players to kind of balance it out. So there's going to be a point where we're going to struggle to make any bigger signings. And I think when you look at that, the gap then gets bigger because we're not able to do that. So it's tough for us guys. I think obviously Wolves are a kind of closer to the top sides than we are at the moment. But I think fans at times have got to kind of remember that even though our owners are, you know, worth a combined £8 billion or something, Aston Villa owners, obviously Wolves owners, worth a bit more, it doesn't mean that we can just go and splash the cash. And because we don't like Neil Taylor, we need a better left back and we'll go and sign someone for 30 million. So I think sometimes it's worth remembering that, and that we're not going to go and buy Dele Alli, Harry Winks and Jesse Lingard in a, you know, triple swoop in the January window, which, you know, maybe you'll do on FIFA, but it's not going to happen. Alex, coming back to Wolves and the game, where is going to be the kind of the key danger men for Wolves? Where's the main play going to come? Obviously, Moutinho, you know, he's obviously one of the older players in the team, but he still makes that midfield tick and that team tick. Where is the good play going to come from Wolves? Where's the danger going to be for Aston Villa?
Well, as you point out, then Gian Moutinho still makes the team tick. His ability to move the ball, his ability to take it under pressure, and to keep things ticking over will be absolutely crucial. The two that really have a major problem are undoubtedly Adama Traore and Pedro Neto. Traore, as we all know about, he's a one-man express train. He can just rip through an opponent at will when he gets it right. He's just very inconsistent with when doing that. But obviously him just being there means you always have to have a man tight to him, and then you always have to have somebody else covering to help. And invariably, a lot of the time, that doesn't necessarily stop him in his tracks. I think Neto has been the brightest point of our season so far. His growth, and he was a big reason why they were so okay with selling Diogo Jota. And he has continued to go from strength to strength. He's adapted. He's turning more and more into both a creator and somebody that can finish moves. He's growing stronger physically. You can see the muscle that he's packed on in the last 12 months. He's made his senior Portugal debut. He's really kicked on, and he's such an impressive player now. He will be the next one that he's getting linked with 50, 60 million moves to Europe's elite, if it will, because he is really doing a good job and he's really impressing. And him against Matty Cash will be a really interesting battle, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Joe, we've spoken about Matty Cash quite a lot this season because he has been a standout player. He's been a good signing for us. Obviously, Alex has mentioned the kind of the threat from the wide areas. As Villa fans, I suppose not necessarily because of him playing for us, but the way he's done against us the last couple of seasons. With Adama Traore and Pedro Neto in the wings, do you feel that that's going to be, particularly down their right-hand side against Matty Target, do you think that's going to be maybe where we're going to struggle the most?
Potentially. So, again, I had a bit of a look at Wolves' attacking play this year, and around sort of 60% is coming down that right-hand side, so they are heavily favouring it. I don't think it's any sort of mystery to anyone or any secret that Target is our weakest defender. And if Adama Traore has a good game, then that could be a real problem. With that being said, I don't think Adama Traore has really looked the same player this season as he did last. He hasn't pushed on quite as much as I think, certainly from a more neutral perspective, I would have expected him to this year. He's one that raises a question for you, actually, Alex. So obviously you've got a player like Adama Traore who's predominantly on the bench, valued at sort of 60, 70 million. What do you do with that when, in reality, those sort of funds could really be used in that starting 11? What do you think of that?
Well, the issue is that, you know, you say worth 50, 60 million or whatever, someone's got to come and pay it. And the simple fact of the matter is nobody has wanted to go anywhere near those numbers. It's all well and good, you know, while X is interested in him, X has been watching his development, whatever, they've got to come and offer up the money for him to go. And it just hasn't happened. You know, Liverpool come in and offer the money for Jota and he goes. Because he kind of had his nose put out of joint by this growing Jimenez Traore partnership, which was the thing that, you know, Wolves were really banking on at the start of this season. And then you're looking, and as I said, Pedro Neto really growing. So, okay, you've got a replacement for Jota, so he can leave. You are 100% correct in Traore just hasn't really kicked on this season. It's been kind of ironic that just as he is really, you know, making his Spain debut and really impressing whenever he plays for Spain, he's just not been in our starting lineup, and some cameos have been, you know, we've not seen the best of him, shall we say. But then against Arsenal the other week, absolutely outstanding, creating chances, pulling defenders apart, and that was the very best of him. So I think it's just something that, you know, some players just, you just naturally want more from them to really force their way into the lineup. He didn't really do it. He's now got the opportunity. So he needs to start giving these big performances again. But as I say, whenever he's on that pitch, teams have to be attracted to him because he's always got that capability of creating something out of nothing. And when he gets a full head of steam, he's so difficult to stop, fair means or foul, you know. So it's something that's going to be, it's going to be something throughout the season that is interesting, how he's used, how often he starts, how often he's a substitute. I think over the last 12 months, they've managed him really well. It's just now, especially with Jimenez absent, we're looking for that little bit more from him. He needs to do that little bit more because there's still glaring holes in his game, you know. He continues to always want the ball to feet to then run at somebody. His ability to run off the ball is really something that is noticeably just not there. The amount of times that there was a situation against Southampton a couple of weeks ago where a kick gets aimed out, Leander Dendonka wins it. Wins a flick on Ryan Bertrand's a guy going up with him. Wins a flick on, so you're expecting Traore spinning in behind, and he's on that ball. He didn't move, just stood and watched. And then Donker ends up chasing his own flick on, and it's those little things that this happens in like the 92nd minute when you're trying to push for a winner, right in front of the bench, right in front of the manager. He'll have looked at that and just gone, "What the heck? What are you doing? It's something that they will have undoubtedly worked on, his movement off the ball." But it's just not there. And I think if I'm seeing that, and if the club are seeing that, then other clubs are seeing that. And that's there are still such things for him to work on in his game. But you just can never take away the threat that he carries. As I've said, he's always going to be such a threat, such a great ability to open up a tight game just by one run that takes out a couple of players. And this is something that even in those games when, and I've said, I might come across as having a downer on him, in those games when he does disappoint, when he's not fully at it, there's still one or two moments when he just breezes by someone, picks his head up, picks out a cross, and a chance is there. It's just, can he do it more? And can he do it more now that the 6'2" centre-forward is missing and he's got the diminutive 5'5" player who isn't going to go up against the centre-half? Can he, instead of chipping up that ball that Jimenez would go and attack, can he find that cutback or that pass? It's the question that needs answering, and can we really unlock him? And it'll be key in this game. Again, as you say, Matt Target struggled to deal with him last season. Can Traore really make it count? Because he will beat him. there are times when he will breeze by him and he will lift his head. Can he make it count in those key moments?
I think that's a really good point. He absolutely will get past target at points. And I think realistically, how often he does that will be one of the defining parts of this game. If he's beating him consistently, we're going to be in trouble. Having Raul Jimenez out, though, obviously that link between Traore and Jimenez was such a key part. That was where his threat came from in reality, was getting to the byline and putting it up with the back stick for him. And it was incredibly effective. I had a bit of a look at your performances last year as well. I noticed that Jimenez, top scorer, obviously was 17. Next was Hotta with 7. And I think your next top scorer was Adama Traore with 4. With obviously Hotta going and Jimenez being out, is that lack of goals a bit of a concern? Obviously, Neto has stepped up quite a lot, scored 3 already. And Fidense is playing well, but is that lack of focal point and the lack of goals potentially coming from elsewhere a bit of a concern this season?
Yeah, it's huge. And as I said earlier, Doherty going as well. In all competitions, I think Doherty had more than Traore. It's a big chunk of the team. It's a lot of goals that have gone now. And so they do need people to step up in other areas. We've never been a team that's been free-flowing and, you know, winning 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. It's always been about being organised, putting in a good performance. That stuff is still there. It's just now that there's going to be that much more of a focus on, right, we need a clean sheet because we aren't going to be free-scoring at the other end. So you are correct. It is a worry. Where is the goal coming from? There'll be more focus on set pieces, which is a part of our game where we have in the last 12 months been really good. I think it's certainly in my lifetime growing up as a Wolves fan, it's never been something I've ever associated Wolves with being good at, but it has been something that's been much improved under the Nuno reign. So we'll be looking for goals from other areas and we just have to hope that we find them.
I think when you mentioned earlier about Traore, and obviously Joe said Traore is going to go past Matt Target quite a few times, I think, in the game. It's just the way it is. But key thing, as you've mentioned, is no Jimenez. And like, it is kind of an easy thing. It's kind of like basics in terms of you've got the pace, get, you know, it's like Sunday League stuff, get the pace down the wing, stick it in to the big guy in the middle. Without Jimenez being there, it does take that little bit more of intellect to be able to pull it back to, you know, Pedence possibly dropping back or someone who's going to be on the edge of the box. And I think, you know, we haven't seen that enough from Adama Traore. So it's going to be a big thing. So that, you know, obviously we've said, and a lot of people will say, that is where the threat's going to come. The biggest threat down the wings. I think when you look at Matty Cash and I think in terms of interceptions per game, I think he's got just over 3 interceptions per game. So outside the top 6, that's the highest in the league. And I think, like Alex said, Neto against Cash, I think it's going to be a good game. I think both defensively and attacking wise. Traore against Target is going to be one to watch, I think, more so for Wolves. And we're hoping that he's not going to be able to do a lot of damage. Because there is that side of things. Okay, he'll get past him, but then what is he going to do with the ball? Another thing as well, that Matty Cash he does get forward. He's an attacking fullback. In terms of his output from fullback, it hasn't been, I think probably more recently, hasn't been, I say, as impressive or as productive. I think earlier games, he was getting involved and it kind of played a key part in our attacks. And I think one thing I noticed as well, that Neto as a winger, is making a fair few interceptions per game. So I think that's going to be one up and down there. And we've mentioned quite a few times on the podcast about Matt Target, and a lot of our fans will mention, and Joe has mentioned, he probably is our weakest link defensively. He does kind of come out as a bit of a scapegoat in a lot of games. And sometimes it's not even when he's played poorly. I think the key thing to remember is that with Matty Cash in front of him for I think every game this season, not every game from the start, but every game, he's always had at some point Trezeguet in front of him, and Trezeguet will work back. Whereas Matt Target at left back on the left hand side has got Jack Grealish in front of him. And there are parts of it where it's Jack Grealish. If he doesn't get back you know, we're not, who's going to be screaming at him for him to get back? You know, he's kind of, he does so much for us attacking wise that he kind of gets away with it. Also, not saying that he's lazy in getting back, but when he does get back, I think there's part of his game that where he knows it's not his role to get stuck in and win those challenges. He always wants to be the man who can start a counter. So he will be back as a player, but not necessarily making those tackles. So I think that's going to be a key thing to look at as well, is that when Adama Traore gets forward, you know, how often is Jack Grealish going to be coming back? And is that going to be a key thing in stopping us making those counter-attacks going forward? Because he is our man, you know, he's our outball a lot of the time. So it's going to be important to see, you know, in terms of factoring whether Trezeguet starts, who comes in for Barkley, because Traore could be an outball as well, and Ollie Watkins. Looking at that, because, you know, we've said a few times, haven't we, Joe, Jack Grealish getting back to cover Matt Target, you know, how effective is it really? And that's going to be something to keep our eye on up against the Adama Traore.
I think realistically, that side of the pitch is going to be what defines this game. It's going to be Grealish against Semedo, and it's going to be Adama Traore against Matty Cash. And whichever side comes out better on that side of the pitch, I think it will probably be the team who wins overall. Realistically, Adama Traore doesn't do a great deal defensively in the same way as Grealish doesn't. You mentioned Semedo earlier. Personally, I have never rated him as a player, and I think he's actually quite a big downgrade. Although there are certain elements of his game that I do think are better than Doherty overall. I think there's a good chance he'll struggle against Grealish tomorrow. In the same way, I think Target's going to get absolutely pulled apart by Adama Traore. That being said, I think that isn't necessarily a slight against either of those defenders. It's just the quality they're coming up against.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. Before we go then, Alex, who's going to be the key man tomorrow?
Just one?
Just one. Who's going to be the key man?
Very difficult, because there's so many just different aspects of the game. I think obviously on your side of the fence, if Grealish is at his very best and we can't control him, then he's going to ultimately be the key man. I think perhaps he's the key man full stop. How we'll stop him will define the game and will allow them a platform from which to go and win it. If they don't stop him, then it'll be a very long afternoon. So I think it'll have to be Grealish.
Are you thinking along the same lines, Joe, or are you thinking possibly elsewhere?
As I say, it's going to be on that side. It's either Grealish or Adama Traore for each side, respectively. For both teams, it depends how well they shut down those individual players and how well they perform individually. If Adama Traore has a good game, then he can be an absolute nightmare for us. But at the same time, if Grealish has a good game, I think that if he plays exceptionally well, we probably win. And it really is that tight, unfortunately. I think for Villa at the moment, particularly with Barkley out, we are back to being the Grealish show.
Yeah, I think that's something that certainly, since Barkley's been out injured, you know, you could certainly see it when it'd been one of those things. I think you're looking at 45% of our play was going down the left. It went down to about 30 with Barkley coming in. And I think it's moving up towards, you know, the 40s. With Barkley coming out. Joe, give us a prediction for the game then.
I think we will win this one, actually. Looking at the form, looking at the players that Wolves have out, I think realistically, it's despite being at home, it's probably more in our favour. A lot of the betting odds agree with that as well. I'm going 2-1 to us.
Okay, Alex, prediction?
Yeah, I think we win. I think we're a little bit too strong in midfield for you tomorrow. I think Moutinho, Neves, and Donka as a threesome win that battle, because I think you see, as you've mentioned, Grealish not tracking back to go to Traore, leaving Hourihan to have to go over there and kind of help out. You get a lot of Luiz and being cornered badly with Ndonka going past him to attack the centre backs, with Neves and Moutinho giving a platform there. I think there's a lot of us outnumbering you in that little area tomorrow at times. And I think we do enough to get the job done, whether it's 1-0, 2-1. I think we do just enough.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're probably going to go completely against it now, but I predicted, I was on a Wolves channel a couple of days ago, I predicted 2-1 Villa win. You know, we've all said it's going to be fairly tight. And I think, as we've said, that left-hand side, right-hand side, you know, Adama v Grealish is going to be a big battle, and that's kind of going to define the game, in all fairness. You know, obviously, fingers crossed for a Villa win. We kind of need to, you know, our form has been a bit indifferent recently. I think a big thing, Alex, you know, since Nuno's been in charge, I think Wolves, in terms of bouncing back from defeats, something that they've been pretty good at.
Yeah, not very often that they go on any kind of streak of losing a couple in a row. They do tend to bounce back when they've had a disappointing result. And there's no masking the fact that, you know, losing 4-0 last weekend was a disappointing result. And I would expect that after a week of training, they will have rectified a few wrongs and they will be bouncing back.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed that Villa can bounce back, because it seems like a while since we've won. But thank you very much, Joe, once again. Obviously, you'll be joining us post-match after the game. Alex, pleasure as always. Thanks for joining us.
No problem, mate.
And look forward to the game. Everyone watching, listening, social media stuff's along the bottom. Make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to get in touch, drop us an email. And also, if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Alex, for everyone listening and watching, how can we find you on social media?
Just on Twitter, at @AA_Richards. That's it.
There we go. If you want to get involved, follow Alex, listen to his views on football. They're interesting, to say the least. But nice one. Thank you very much, everyone. We've been Villa together. Speak soon. Thank you.